Welcome to episode 34 of the Avocado Games Cast, the Avocados Gaming Podcast. We've got a super duper fun episode lined up for you today, because we're going to be playing a game we call the Video Game Olympics, and unlike Pachinko, the points are entirely made up, and they cannot be redeemed for prizes. Well, my name's Merv, and joining me, he's on a wanted list in the Mushroom Kingdom for killing hundreds of sweet, innocent Goombas. It's Wolfman Jew!
Howdy!
And he's the Dragon of Dojima, the Mad Dog of Shimano, and the Unicorn of the Avocado. It's Andy Tuttle.
Hey, what's going on? Thank you so much for that lovely introduction.
You're very welcome. I know you're a big Yakuza enthusiast.
Uh-huh. Absolutely love that game.
Yeah.
Top three last year.
Yeah, Yakuza 6 is coming later this year. I'm kind of pumped.
Yeah, me too. I've been trying to play through 3 on the PlayStation 3, and it's good, but it's different. I'd rather be playing on PS4.
Yeah, I've actually decided I've been watching the cutscenes of each of the Yakuza games on YouTube, trying to catch up in time for Yakuza 6. We'll see if I succeed. I don't know how far I'm going to get on that project. So guys, I have some very, very sad news. The year of Luigi is over. I know, it's been going on since 2013. First, we thought it was just a year, and then it became a fiscal year, and then it became a whole 4 or 5 years of Luigi. It's finally the year of the Octoling.
Finally.
I know. Finally. We've been waiting for this for who knows how long. And in case you guys don't, in case you listeners aren't aware of what we're referencing, Nintendo producer, I believe Yoshiaki Koizumi, declared it the year of the Octoling in the Nintendo Direct that happened earlier this week.
I think that was the only interesting news from that Direct. I might be wrong, though.
Yeah, nothing else interesting.
Yeah, they didn't just announce a new entry in a franchise that everybody is super excited for.
I believe you're referring to the fact that we will be finally getting Marks as a playable character in Kirby Star Allies.
Oh, yeah. I've been waiting for that for forever.
They got my letters, finally.
Yeah, and they know just how familiar I am with the entire Kirby franchise, and my experience with it isn't limited to the 20 minutes I spent playing the demo of Kirby Star Allies.
I will drag you kicking and screaming into this bold new pink reality, Merv.
Oh, Kirby was my jam in Super Smash Bros. It's the only character I would ever play because he could suck up the other characters and use their powers.
Exactly. When I was a kid, that was the reason why Kirby was my favorite character, because he had everyone's powers.
Exactly. And speaking of Super Smash Bros., in all seriousness, that is the big announcement that came out of the Nintendo Direct. And now, there's all the speculation about which characters they're going to include, which stages they're going to include, whether it's going to be a single-player mode, whether this is like a souped-up port of SSB4. Do you guys have any speculation?
I spent an hour before recording this on another podcast, but I have my thoughts, Tuttle, please.
What's the 30-second rundown?
The 30-second rundown. I think it's going to be a brand new game. I really do, just based on the fact that they show Link in his Breath of the Wild costume. I think they've had enough time. I think somebody said that they finished the last kind of patch on Smash Brothers for Wii sometime last year. So I think they've had enough time to kind of work on a new game and kind of, you know, fix up the previous one. So I'm really excited to see where it comes or what comes from this. I think the Squid Kid's going to be a great addition. I'm really excited.
Yeah, you meant Smash Bros. For Wii U, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I don't know if they're still updating Brawl. I don't know if they're still not. Nintendo Wii's connected to the internet.
Oh man, yeah.
I never actually played SSB4. I've had a lot of experience with the N64 Smash, and a little bit less with Melee and Brawl, but I never actually managed to play 4. I heard 4 is one of the better entries in the series.
4 is my favorite by a wide margin.
Okay.
I think it has the best art style. I think it has the most satisfying movement. The thing with it is And what kind of fast, like, one of the parts that I love about Super Smash Brothers, like, there's so many things I love about it. I love about the characters, the music, the stages, the way it, you know, exploits and looks at history. And I mean, I love the fact that it was kind of the thing that put my writing kind of on the map. But I also really love this sort of weird hype and speculation cycle. It can be really overwhelming, and to be honest, I'm not looking forward to it as much as I was looking forward to Smash 4's, just because it's really not been that long.
Right.
Because it's been about less than 4 years since Smash for Wii U came out, and it's been only... It has been under... a little under... about 2 years since development stopped on Smash Wii U from the downloadable content.
Yeah, so my guess is that they probably had... they probably split the teams on... like, people... here's a small team working on DLC and patches, and then they put the rest of the team on the new Super Smash Brothers pretty much immediately after the other one was finished, and that would give them a lot of time to iron out everything for release.
It's weird, though, because, like, it's uncharted territory.
Yeah. Like, Nintendo's been doing faster turnarounds on their franchises lately. I mean, Splatoon 2 came not that long after the first Splatoon.
No, I think we were all pretty sure that was going to be a port, not a sequel. And then
I actually thought it was going to be a sequel, but I also understand why people thought it was going to be a port.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just so soon.
Yeah, and like Smash Brothers development time is about 2.5 to a little under 3 years.
So they've got the time. It's just for the fans, it's kind of a weird hype cycle because we went through this fairly recently.
Especially since, like, they're saying it's coming out this year, and assuming there are no delays, then you're not going to have the, like, Melee, like, Brawl and Smash 4, there was about a year just of, like, slow updates on the site, which I loved. I found fascinating, but...
I mean, yeah. I think the Nintendo's kind of hooked into the shorter hype cycle mindset.
Yeah.
Now, which, to me... like, there are definitely downsides in that you don't get that slow build, but it's also kind of refreshing in that you don't, you know, build up anticipation for something, or have to wait for years. Like, they announce something, it's going to come out in a few months, and you're going to like it. It works pretty well.
Yeah.
So, before I move on, any wishes, desires, speculation for characters?
Andy, I'll go last.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't mean to put that on you.
No, it's fine. I'd love to see Snake come back. Only because I want a Snake amiibo, really. And that's honestly what I'm most excited for. It sounds strange. I want whatever amiibos they make for these characters for the new game so I can fill up my shelf even more full of shit.
I mean, they're nicely made toys, so I understand the impulse to get them.
The Bayonetta amiibo is probably my favorite one out of all the bunch. It's so well made and nice, and it was only $15. It's great.
Nice.
I really need to get myself, or not need, but I'd like to get myself a Greninja one.
Do they have a Greninja amiibo?
They have one for all the Smash characters.
Oh, okay.
That was the whole, because Smash was basic. The start of, like, the amiibos entirely.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole premise of Smash is that they're toys fighting each other, so yeah. I guess it makes sense. For a second, I thought you were going to say they have one for all the Pokemon, and I was going to be like, whoa, what?
Jesus, that'd be too much.
I don't know. You say that.
I only have so much room in my cabinet.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead, Wolfman.
I was going to ask you if there are any characters you're particularly looking forward to or would like to see.
So, this is going to be a little bit, of a long shot, but I'm going to mention it anyway. I think there's a possibility that for Xenoblade Synergy, they're going to kind of pull an Ice Climbers and do a whole Rex Pirate thing. But
If they could get that to work, then I guess that means they could get the Ice Climbers to work.
I bring the Ice Climbers back too while they're at it. you know?
They were cut because of the 3DS limitations.
Yeah, which aren't going to exist on the Switch. So bring them back and have them fight. Also make a new Ice Climbers game. Just for fun.
Yeah.
Like a super new one or a super retro one?
Whatever Nintendo wants to do. Nintendo's sitting on so much IP that they're not exploiting. Like, when was the last time we got an Ice Climbers game?
Well, that would be Versus Ice Climber, which was an arcade port. Something like 1985.
Okay, yeah.
It should be noted that, like, Ice Climber, the reason why the Ice Climbers were chosen in Melee was because they wanted a general retro character. Not Mr. Game & Watch, because he represented hardware, but, like, it was a choice between basically them, Bubbles from Clue Clue Land, the Excite Bike Racer, or the guy from Balloon Fight.
Yeah, I can see why they picked the ones that had the most personality.
What, you don't think Balloon Fight guy is cool? Just flapping his arms around? That's personality.
Yeah, the personality, moving your arms in a funny way. That being said, Nintendo now has an entire game about moving your arms in a funny way. Literally called Arms, so...
Yeah.
And that's probably got some representation, too.
Give me a Balloon Fighter Labo.
That actually sounds really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be down for that. Wolfman, any speculation or a character you really want to see?
Truthfully, my attitude going into Smash 4 was basically come what may. Like, I really love the being surprised. And one of the things I really liked about Smash 4 was being surprised. My favorite character, the character I wanted most to get in, Paper Mario, didn't. But, like, seeing characters like Rosalina or Greninja, who has since become my favorite character in Smash, or Robin, like, just completely come out of nowhere was really exciting. And I feel like we've gotten to a point where we're going to have to find more weird and surprising characters, and that's exciting to me.
Yeah, I feel like they can dig deep into... I mean, they've shown they can take characters from franchises that they don't even own. Like, we've gotten Snake before, we've gotten Sonic, we've gotten Pac-Man, of all things. So I think they're going to go to that well again, and it's going to be interesting to see what third-party characters they bring in.
Yeah, I guess... Andy?
I was just saying, I mean, we just have to think about who have they partnered with recently a lot.
Namco.
Namco, Platinum. I mean, you think we'll get... who's the guy from Wonderful 101? What's his name?
That would be Wonder Red, and Nintendo fully owns the rights to Wonderful 101, so that wouldn't be, like, a third-party issue.
Okay.
Right. I'm sure Bayonetta will be coming back. She's pretty closely intertwined with Nintendo by this point. And so we don't know who's making the game. The only credits are for Nintendo and Howl Laboratories, who collectively own the rights to Smash Brothers as the IP. Mm-hmm. So it's probably not them. They're not that large of a studio. So, Namco, you know, they had Pac-Man and they made Smash 4 and, you know, they made Pokken. I mean, look, I don't think it's really going to happen, but that trailer gave me really weird Dark Souls vibes.
Oh yeah, if they manage to get Solaire or whatever in there,
they do have the
Evo form.
Yeah,
maybe that's a hint.
I don't think that's saying it. I don't think at all. I don't know. For some reason, that's like the weird thing that is making me excited is the idea of going that far into lunacy.
Like, they just have, like, a Lordran stage.
Yeah.
I'd be down. They've also partnered a bunch with Ubisoft, so I think we're going to get some sort of Rabbids representation in there.
I think Rayman, more likely.
I'd be down for a Rayman in there.
Because Rayman is actually already in Smash 4. He's just not a character, he's a trophy.
Ah, okay. So that makes sense to get Rayman has special powers, right? He can fight other people.
He functionally would work fine in any kind of platform action game.
Yeah, so you could he lifts pretty easily from genre to genre. So I think Rayman or some sort of rabbit type character, it makes sense to have that in there. But it's not like we're gonna see other Ubisoft franchises in there. It's not like we're gonna see what's his face, Jason Brody from Far Cry 3. So
Aiden Pierce kind of like making it all lame and boring it up as, or I guess he'd be Aiden piercing it up.
Excuse me, it'd be iconic, all right?
It's very iconic. Did you know, perhaps, that some people have to do bad things in order to stop bad people? Did you know this edgy new concept? And how hacking is the future?
I wish I knew what you guys were talking about, but I have this is going all over my head.
Oh, we're just making fun of Watch Dogs, which was not a great game for a lot of reasons.
It didn't look great.
Chief among them, it was kind of racist and kind of classist, too.
It basically wants to, like, drew in kind of every single, like, turn of the century, not even cyberpunk, but, like, hacking, low grade dystopia, like a lot of like Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, a lot of like the dumber parts of the Nolan Batman movies, like their character is based, like the main character is basically, what if Batman was a boring dad with a baseball cap?
I think and you mean also, boring like, uncle.
Oh, you're right. Sorry.
That's all right. If you can't remember whether he's a dad or an uncle, I think it points to how memorable this game actually was. But sweet. Yeah, it was. There were some neat ideas in there, but the execution just wasn't there, and the writing just let the game down horribly.
I know we're going off track, but I just wanted to say that part of the reason the execution was bad was because there was too much executing.
Oh, yeah. This is a game that had a whole bunch of weird random minigames that had nothing to do with the actual game and just didn't fit. Like, there are these weird hacking arcade games that had nothing to do with the main sort of gameplay.
Oh, I was just talking about how it's just like most of the time you just had a gun and instead of like using hacking to survive, you just like shoot people.
Right. That was also a big problem. And the stealth mechanics were underdeveloped. So if you wanted to go through kind of hacking and knocking people out, it was extremely difficult. So you basically had to shoot your way through. Yeah, it wasn't the most well-developed of games. All right. So that's Nintendo Direct. That's a nice discussion of Super Smash Bros. Let's move on to what we've actually been playing recently instead of what we'll be playing come December. Andy, what have you been playing?
So I've been spending a lot of time with a fighting game on the PS4 called Undernight Inbirth EXE : late ST bracket.
I am liking that, like, grossly, disgustingly oversized title.
It makes no sense. The only things that make sense in the title are Undernight and Inbirth, because there's something about a Hollow Knight that all these demons come out, and then an Inbirth is like an ancient being that's born into a body of a younger person who exists. I don't know. The game doesn't make any fucking sense, but it's fun as shit to play. I love this game. I just beat it last night. I beat it with every character last night. Well, not all at once, but there's 20 characters. Beat the whole game with all of them. Saw the whole story. Got the little trophies and everything. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. The way the combat works is I think of it like one of those cartoons where there's like a cloud of smoke and there's just a bunch of arms and legs coming out of it. Do you know what I'm talking about? You ever seen that?
Yeah.
That's what the fighting is like in this game. You just kind of take your two characters and you just mash them together, and it's just a flailing arms and legs, and it's great. I have a lot of fun with this game.
Yeah, it sounds like it's maybe a little bit less finesse than in the super technical kind of fighting games.
Yeah, it just feels very fluid. You know what I mean? Okay. Like, you can just... Like, I feel like I'm dancing with my thumbs. Like, I'm moving the one thumbstick with my left thumb, and I'm pushing the buttons with my right thumb. It's like a ballet of chaos. I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds like it would be a lot of fun. I haven't even heard of this game. Is it a new one or an old one?
So it's a few years old. This is like the second port of it. It was an arcade game in Japan, and then it was made for the PS3. And then this is like the final definitive version that they made for the PS4 that has all the characters and all of the costumes and bullshit that you can buy with in-game currency. There's no DLC or anything like that, but or that I know of. I'm sure there is, but
I'm looking up the Wikipedia page, and apparently this was also released on PS3, not just the early versions, but the final version you have.
That's oh, was really it?
Neat. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, okay. I mean, it doesn't look like – it doesn't look graphically powerful. You know, it looks like a PS3 game, but it's nice. So, yeah, I'm not surprised it came out on PS3 as well.
Yeah, I'm fine, frankly, these days I'm fine with things looking like PS3 games as long as they play well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, especially because, you know, I'm carrying around a Switch in my bag and, you know – it doesn't. It does. It's not necessarily a graphical powerhouse, but you know, as long as it looks fine, I'm good. So
art direction will always supersede graphical fidelity.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure. And I say this as somebody who's actually a big proponent and like evangelist for graphical fidelity because I think it does make a difference. But you know, at a certain point, there are diminishing returns, and it just makes. It, like Wolfman says, like you need the art direction. You can have high fidelity visuals and garbage art direction, your game's going to look like shit. But you can do with lower fidelity and better art direction, and you'll make a really beautiful looking game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's Under Night in Birth, or I'm not going to add all the bits and bobs to the title. Is it EXE somewhere there?
I believe it is Under Night in Birth, EXE colon late, what bracket ST.
Bracket, yeah. You got to close that bracket afterwards.
Oh, sorry, other bracket.
Yeah, open bracket, ST, close bracket.
I think we're just going to close the bracket at the end of the show, and that's going to be the entire title of the game. So, Wolfman, what have you been playing?
Sadly, I actually haven't been really getting to play stuff a lot. I've been trying to write more. Possibly too much, because I restarted my old daily Smash Brothers blog, and I'm still writing stuff for Source Gaming, so I haven't really been playing that much. I played a little bit of Crypt of the Necrodancer, which was very fun. I played this very fun Steam game called Planet Diver, which I learned about from Super Bunny Hop. That's this very shallow but still pretty fun game where you basically... It's sort of like an endless runner where you are... trying to dodge enemies and pick up what is literally called star stuff.
Oh, neat.
But the real thing is Golf Story.
Oh, okay. How's that been going? Because I've actually played that game.
Oh, yeah. I guess I should also note that with very soon, the Nintendo Wii Shop channel is going to be closing. Or not closing. It won't accept funds. So I just want to put out a general warning to people. It will stop accepting funds on the 26th of this March, this month. So if you have time, go check it out. Go find some stuff that hasn't been ported to other consoles, like ActRaiser. Sorry, I didn't mean to take that soapbox. Or I did, but I'm sorry.
Yeah, so anyway, Golf Story.
Yeah, Golf Story is... I mean, it is, you know, what it was billed at. It's a golf game. It's also an RPG. It's got this really cool, weird fusion where on one hand it has like this kind of Game Boy Advance level sprites. Like it's not trying to mimic Super Nintendo stuff. It's weirdly mimicking like GBA stuff, but with a much higher graphical fidelity. And it's not for like a retro thing. It's done mostly, I think, just to make it easier to read information. Namely, wind patterns, because this is a game where, you know, you, much like any Pokemon master, you try to be the very best like no one ever was, except that this is not a world of Pokemon. It's a world where people are really, really, really into golf. And that Pokemon comparison is not meant to be taken idly. Like, it is literally a world where like, everyone is super damn into golf.
Yeah, like, it gets to the point, there's mild spoilers, there's a caveman world where just all the cavemen and cavewomen play golf. It's bizarre. It's an extremely bizarre game. And even the people who aren't into golf, they play, like, frisbee golf.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like they're considered almost like apostates because they play frisbee and not golf.
Yeah. It's a very bizarre
game. Just like in real life.
Yeah, and the plot, I've only just gotten to the fourth course, but already the plot has gone in very bizarre ways, and I think that there's this hint of, like, this dark conspiracy.
It's on the Switch, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on Switch.
It's an eShop game on the Switch, and it's...
I think it's a Switch exclusive.
Yeah, it's a Switch exclusive, because it uses the HD vibration, or whatever it's called, to a great extent.
Yes, the HD Rumble.
Yeah, HD Rumble. That's what it's called, yeah.
It's the thing that that makes a fizzy sound when Mario jumps into the bubbling sea in Super Mario Odyssey.
You know, I mostly play Switch games with the controller, like the Pro Controller. So, I mean, would you recommend me taking my Joy-Cons out and playing
actually,
a story with this?
Actually, doesn't the Switch Pro Controller have HD Rumble? I'm pretty sure it does.
I'm not entirely sure.
I don't know.
This game is pretty much meant to be played in handheld mode. I played it on the TV once or twice, and it's one of the few games that I just preferred playing in handheld mode. I mean, it works. It's not like there's anything about the control scheme that makes it better for handheld. It just feels like it feels very much like a handheld game. And you don't lose fidelity, really, going from handheld to going from TV to handheld.
Yeah, well, I couldn't imagine what the game isn't very graphically taxing.
Yeah, it feels very much like the kind of game you'd have played on a Game Boy, but now you get to play it on a bigger screen and with Rumble and all sorts of other fun features. I was going to say, I should also mention the game is extremely Australian in a lot of ways.
Yes, it is. It's basically what if, like, an island, a weird, like, ecologically diverse island in Australia basically was sort of, like, taken over by a golf-themed cult for, like, a few hundred years, and then just the culture that would arise about that.
Yeah, so it's basically Tasmania, but on golf.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, cool. there are there's a lot of Australian slang that you might have to look up, there's one golf course that's just entirely just run by bogans, and it's really funny.
I also checked, the Pro Controller does have HD Rumble.
All right, okay. So feel free to play this on your TV. Me, I played this mostly lying in bed or on the commute to work. So I found it a good game for that sort of thing, but it also works as a couch game. So I highly recommend it for, I think, $20 in the eShop. So
nice.
Go for it. As for what I have been playing, I have been playing this delightful little point-and-clickish game called Chuchel. I believe that's how you pronounce it. Even if it isn't, I'm going to keep saying Chuchel. It is the newest game from Amanita Design, so they're the people who did Samaras 3 and Botanicula. So they specialize in these kind of wordless point-and-click adventure games. Games like Botanicula have kind of ludicrously difficult puzzles. Chuchel is very different. It's kind of split into bite-sized chunks. Each puzzle is its own little room. You don't have to worry about traversing gigantic levels or interconnected areas to find items to use in other parts of the map. Every challenge is very self-contained. And just like every other Amanita Design game, there's a lot of goofy animation and music to go along with it. The premise here is that you play as this like fuzzy black blob with an acorn hat, I guess, who's trying to grab a cherry and keeps consistently failing to grab a cherry. So every puzzle is based around him trying to get his hands on this cherry. And usually when you finally find the solution and you manage to grab the cherry, it gets yoinked away from him at the last second. And you get flicked into the next puzzle. So it's a bizarre kind of comedy adventure game. I recommend it. I've enjoyed my time with it so far. If you're into goofy kind of indie games, then I would say go for it.
Could you compare it to anything else? Because I'm having a hard time, like, picturing it in my mind, like what you do.
So it's just like your regular kind of point and click, but imagine a bite-sized point and click game on each screen. So every puzzle is sort of independent from the previous one instead of the big long puzzles you typically see in point and clicks. So
gotcha. Does that like an overarching story? Like even though they're separate puzzles, do each of the puzzles lead to like a conclusion?
Not really. It's more like, here's another stupid situation where Black Blob Dude is trying to get his hands on a cherry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's just a sequence of puzzles. Imagine it's sort of like all those first-person puzzlers, but in 2D. So imagine something like Portal, where each puzzle is very self-contained, or something like Cube or Quantum Conundrum. Speaking of which, the sequel to Cube, Cube 2, comes out next week. So if you're into that, then go for it.
I hope it's called Cube 2 Hypercube.
That would be great, but I don't think they've managed to go beyond three dimensions, unfortunately.
The prequel. Yeah, or the prequel Square.
The Square. I would totally play that. Yeah. I think I've seen like a preview of this, and the puzzling looks pretty good, but they added a story, and not a funny story, like a serious story. And, you know, to me, first-person puzzlers are kind of inherently goofy, right? Because the mechanics are so contrived that I'd rather they be comedy games like Portal or Quantum Conundrum than, like, serious stories like, what was that Magnetism game that came out a while ago? MagRunner, Dark Pulse. Like, it tried to insert Cthulhu mythos into a game about like using magnets to solve puzzles, and it was really totally bizarre. And Cube 2 unfortunately seems to be falling into the same trap of having kind of a horror-ish sci-fi story, which it doesn't really need to have. So here's a tip to all you game designers out there. If you're making, you know, your puzzle games with your very contrived mechanics, I prefer you make them funny, because the mechanics are kind of inherently funny to me, but I don't know, it's just me.
Well, it's just a stupid idea. You're trapped in a room, and you got to figure out how to get out. Like, that just doesn't happen in real life, you know?
I mean, it doesn't happen unless you, you know, get kidnapped, I guess.
Well, that's true, or you live in a Saw movie.
Or you get, as Wolpen said, you get kidnapped and taken to a school with 15 other students and are forced to kill your classmates. So I guess seriousness can apply to puzzle-type games.
Well, yeah. I mean, isn't Myst serious?
Right, but Myst doesn't have really goofy contrived mechanics, does it?
I don't know. I've actually never played Myst.
Yeah, Myst was actually one of the first gifts I got on Steam, and I have never played it, and I feel super guilty, and I've also lost touch with the person who gifted it to me. Not because I haven't played it yet, just because she kind of dropped off the map.
It's a weird game. I played it when I was a kid, and I had no idea that, I guess, mild spoilers, you can get off the island, or you like go through these portals to other like dimensions or something. I don't know. I had no idea. I just walked from like the rocket ship to the beach to like this like cube puzzle thing to a library, and I was like, this game fucking sucks, and then I just left.
Yeah, I've heard the puzzles are extremely kind of contrived and difficult and missed.
So I have a Mac computer, so I'm not really realistically going to ever be able to play Myst.
I'm sure there's some version of Myst that runs on a Mac at this point. There's got to be.
It's like one of the biggest games of all time when it came out. It's got to have a Mac port, I think.
Weirdly enough, I just checked Steam. The only thing is something called Real Myst, which doesn't seem like... I have no idea what that means.
So it means that instead of static backgrounds and sprites, everything is done in-engine.
Really?
So they remade it in an engine, basically.
Okay, cool. I think that is available, so maybe I'll check that out.
Yeah, so that's what I have, and I still haven't played it yet, so I'm sorry, person who gifted it to me. All right, moving on to the next segment. We thought we're going to try something a little experimental for this podcast. So here's the premise. Video game characters have tons of special powers and they're capable of amazing feats. I mean, video game characters do things that no human would ever be capable of doing. But usually they're using it to just kind of beat up enemies or solve puzzles or slaughter dozens of innocent Goombas. What if they had to use their abilities to do things that regular people do? So what if they had to, I don't know, participate in a pie eating contest or teach math to children? What we want to ask is, which video game character will be best at those things? And we're going to answer that question today. We've got a whole list of tasks and duties and scenarios that we want video game characters to complete, and we're going to debate which characters would be the best for each of them. Sound like fun?
Yes.
Sure. All right.
So let's actually ask one of the questions I asked in the intro to this. Which video game character do you think would make the best math teacher?
Oh, God.
Who's the main character in Math Blaster?
I don't know.
I thought there were space aliens. I had Algebra Blaster when I was in, like, I don't know, fifth or sixth grade.
Let's look this up. What's...
Yeah, somebody look it up.
I'm looking it up right now.
Okay.
So if you hear typing, normally I like to mute the mic when I type. I'm just going to keep it open because I figure we'll probably be looking up a lot of stuff.
Space aliens?
Yeah. It is a character called Blasternaut, a.k.a. Max Blaster, a 12-year-old boy obsessed with science and space.
Nice.
And his galactic commander, a cool 12-year-old girl who looks like an Earthling but is really an alien.
Oh.
So, fun. Just assume Blastronaut is the math teacher, I guess.
Okay, I can see that.
I think he'd be of the right age to be a high school teacher at this point, right? I mean, that game came out in the early 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, it came out in 1983.
83. See, there you go. The guy's like, what?
12? So then he'd be in his 40s now.
Yeah, perfect math age for a teacher.
Yeah. He probably has kids of his own. He probably is like Blastronaut Jr. and Blastronet.
Hey, there's something that the developers can do. Let's bring back fucking Math Blaster.
Switch.
Yeah. Edutainment has like kind of died, and it's a little sad because I grew up on Edutainment. Mm-hmm. Like all my parents let me play until I was about maybe 8 or not, like maybe 10, I guess, was educational games. Then, I had to convince them that something like SimCity 2000 was actually educational.
It did. It taught you about politics and how to use, like, how to, like, control things like tax rates and Godzilla.
Yeah. It also taught me that my transit advisor was a complete lunatic.
Sorry, I'm going to go more SimCity, but on the Super Nintendo version, I never built roads. A friend of mine taught me that you can beat congestion by just building railroad tracks around everything. So my entire city was nothing but railroads. Nobody drove cars. You just took the train everywhere. And I was always like A+ in, like, you know, traffic or whatever it was.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's like dunking on Will Wright right there. I think Will Wright would actually be a pretty good math teacher, but sadly he is not a video game character. He's just
actually
a video game developer.
Sorry, Merv, but yeah, but I'm going to have to actually on this, Merv. Will Wright is actually a character in the Super Nintendo SimCity called Dr. Wright, where he has giant butt cheek hair and a Hitler mustache.
That's true. Bring Dr. Wright to the new Super Smash Brothers.
He's been an assist trophy for.
Oh,
too
that's
long.
Right. He makes that big ass building come up, right, and knocks you off off the stage. Yeah.
I actually don't know if you're joking or not about
Smash.
On the show notes, I'm going to be putting this in, Dr. Wright.
I believe he's a character in SimCity. I just don't know if he's actually a Smash character. Okay. Moving on. I think he would actually work. Andy, do you have any suggestions for a math teacher?
Oh, man. Who would teach you math? Jesus, I'm trying to think of somebody who could be smart, but that seems too easy. I'm just
like maybe gonna... like Gordon Freeman is smart, but he doesn't talk, so he wouldn't be able to teach.
Well, he could teach the deaf, right?
Yeah, maybe he signs. I don't know. Do you think Gordon Freeman knows sign language?
That man knows everything.
Yeah. He's, I mean, basically, Gordon Freeman is to Half-Life what the main character in a self-insert fan fiction is to any Star Trek story, which is to say he is a sublimation of Val, of the collective like fantasies of Val's writers of having a super buff scientist who beats up meatheads. So I can believe he can teach kids math.
Yeah, well, see, what he does is he just takes the gravity gun, right, and then he just stacks blocks with it, and that's how you teach addition and subtraction.
I would, yeah, I mean, that's how you teach addition and subtraction to elementary schoolers, for sure.
Yeah, so he'd be a great kindergarten teacher. Right now, Gordon Freeman, kindergarten teacher, that's final answer.
Yeah, all right, let's go with that. Okay, so we've solved the problem of math education in our nation.
Finally.
Yeah, I know. It's been a tough battle, and educators all across the country have been debating this, but I think once we get Will Wright in on this, we're going to fix everything. So which video game character do you think would actually be good at taking care of, say, a pet, like a pet dog?
I mean, I think the main character in Fallout 3.
Oh, yeah, because the main character in Fallout 3 has a dog.
Yeah.
I think also the people who play Pokemon the nice way.
There's a mean way to play Pokemon?
I mean, yeah, you give the Pokemon really, like, bitter medicine.
Oh, I thought you meant give them, like, really shitty names, like Aswang.
No, you give them good names, because that's what you do. Like, Dan DeLewis, my amazingly overpowered jump bluff, which, you know what, no, I already talked about Golf Story.
It's okay. Speaking of the Pokemon franchise, you know who would be good at taking care of a pet dog is Nurse Joy.
Yeah.
Because she knows her way around animals, for sure. If you want somebody a little less verbal, then take a Chansey. Chansey can take care of my dog any day.
I also got a question. What type of dog is it? Are we talking about like a Nintendog, or are we talking about it like one of the Varin from Mass Effect?
Assume the dog is
dog.
Assume the dog isn't vicious.
Okay.
But is still, you know, a dog and is not terribly well trained. Andy, any thoughts on which video game character you'd like to take care of your dog?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to go a little weird on this one. So there's a tabletop game called Elder Sign, where you basically – it's kind of like Yahtzee but with Cthulhu stuff. They made a –
Okay.
Yeah.
That is far afield.
So they made an app for it, a mobile app. So I'm going to call this guy a video game character. There's a guy in there named Ashcan Pete. And he's just kind of this like drifter who like rides trains, and his every time he's in all of these different Fantasy Flight Cthulhu games that they make, and he always comes with a dog character named Dusty, and he just brings him along, you know, fighting Cthulhu and other vicious Lovecraft monsters, and the dog always comes out surviving at the end. So I think he's a great guy to take care of your dog. Gives him exercise, and he saves the world at the same time.
That is a very good case for a very violent man to have a dog.
The other thing I would think is, if this has nothing to do with training, all for some reason I just wanted to highlight a Canadian television program from the 1970s called The Littlest Hobo.
I've heard of this, and despite growing up in Canada, I've never seen it.
It's awesome. It is basically what if – it's essentially the Incredible Hulk, like the 70s version, like the 70s TV version, except with a dog.
Okay. We need to watch that at some point. Just up in there. Share it with the world. Speaking of Canadian television characters who would be great at taking care of dogs, Mr. Dress-Up, for one, I think he'd be great. And also Pokeroo, the polka dot dress-wearing kangaroo, would be great. Because he's already got to take care of Bibble. Bibble is basically a koosh ball strapped to a Roomba. I don't think a dog is a huge step up from that. So,
damn. Not giving
Yeah, Canadian TV is trippy, man. All right? Like, that's what I was raised on, is a blue kangaroo who wore a polka dot dress.
Yeah, the only Canada shows I know are Degrassi and You Can't Do That on Television. That's pretty much my childhood Canada shows.
Yeah, I've actually never seen a full episode of Degrassi. I've seen bits and pieces of it here and there, but I didn't really grow up on it.
Yeah, it's great. Drake was on it.
Yeah, that's
one, actually.
Yeah, he was. Aubrey Drake Graham. Straight out of T-Dot, yo. it's so weird. I knew him originally as the guy from Degrassi, so it's so weird seeing him become a rap superstar.
And he was in a wheelchair. He got shot, and he got paralyzed.
Oh, but he still played basketball. Yeah, he's...
great at basketball in that show.
Yeah, and now people are all over the world are dancing to Hotline Bling and making memes of this guy. So, you know, you really can start from the bottom and make it to the top. All right, let's pick something a little more obscure. Which video game character do you think would be really good at Olympic Luge?
Oh, Jesus. Mario.
Oh, yeah, because he goes down the slides in the Mario games.
Yeah, you have to race that the penguin in Mario 64.
Yeah. It's not like the douchebag penguin you have to kind of race to the bottom of the hill. That's not the same penguin who lost her kid, right?
I don't think so.
No. Although they probably use like the same design.
Okay. So the other day people were sharing on the Avocado, the site that birthed this podcast, they were sharing all these Mario 64 penguin memes where Mario's like stealing the little penguin dude from the mom and like throwing it off the edge.
I think we all did that. If you didn't do that when you played that game, you weren't doing it right.
I don't know, because I did it, but by accident, because it's very hard to...
to manage that little kid?
Cool Mountain is a really interesting stage because that's basically the point where there's this massive difficulty spike because, as it turns out, bottomless pits and very steep, slippery slopes are difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that the Mario levels where everything on the bottom can kill you are always the hardest. So, for example, that's why, say... mild Mario Odyssey spoilers. The Lost Kingdom is so much harder than the other levels because it's just purple goo that can kill you everywhere.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the tamer levels like New Donk City, where pretty much nothing can kill you, are a lot easier to play through. Of course, not to say that New Donk City has no challenge. I mean, it's
just
probably
a different kind of challenge.
Yeah, it's the most sort of pure expression of using Mario's abilities and chaining them together in difficult ways. But in terms of stuff that just like kills you dead, ain't much of it in New Donk City. So Mario would be... Mario's good at everything. He also... Wasn't he at the Olympics with Sonic? And Luge one of the games in there?
Well, let me look.
I've never played any of those games. They never go down in price. I've always wanted to play them, but like if I want to pick up the Wii U copy, it's like still like $50.
$50? So Mario did play Luge at the Olympics with Sonic.
Only in the DS version, apparently.
Huh. Okay, so I guess that means Sonic is also good at Luge?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd rather see Eggman do Luge. I think his body's a little more built for it. Even though he's big, but I feel like he looks smooth, you know what I mean?
Yeah. He just like roll down the hill.
Yeah. I don't even know if he would roll. I think he just has a very smooth belly, so I feel like he would just go like right on down the hill, you know what I mean?
The one in your belly, that's skeleton, right?
Yeah, but we're playing with, we have liberties here, so.
Okay, yeah. I think, yeah, so if we want to do the modified version of this, Eggman would be great at skeleton.
There we go.
And Mario and Sonic would be great at luge. Well, you might just need to put rings on the track if you want Sonic to do it.
Right. Here's the other note. Is it classic Sonic or is it the new 3D Sonic?
I vote for new Sonic because while the scarf is ridiculous and everything, Sonic Boom has sort of become the one Sonic property I genuinely love.
No kidding. Wow.
Also, the scarf will keep him warm. So.
Oh, there you go. Does he have goggles too?
No.
Okay, I could have sworn he had goggles.
Anyway. We can give him he'll need goggles to do luge. Him goggles.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure Amy won't let him luge without them. You know how Amy is.
Oh my god. That's a whole other topic to talk about. I got things to say about that. But anyway, moving
things
on.
Things to say about Amy. Yeah, it's
I play Sonic Generations right now too for my daughter, and I got some things to say about Amy and that, but anyway.
What I will say, though, is that it's finally nice to see Sonic date somebody who's species appropriate.
Right. Not Lacey Chabert.
Again, I have played that game, twice.
God.
To the completion.
Why?
Anyway. I mean, why not? I guess.
Wait, by this game you mean Sonic
life
Boom?
Matters.
Whatever.
That's why you should have played it twice.
Isn't Sonic Boom the game where Knuckles has this ridiculous bug but you can essentially infinitely jump with him?
Yes, yep.
Okay.
Sorry, I meant to say I played through Sonic 2006 twice.
Oh, okay. So that's Sonic Boom is the game with the Knuckles bug. Sonic 2006 has a whole bunch of other bugs that you can.
That was the Lacey Chabert kiss one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Big the Cat is just everywhere for no reason. Wait, no, that's Sonic Adventure, where Big the Cat is just everywhere for no reason. Why does he actually just get off his big cat ass and actually help?
Because he's an asshole.
He is kind of an asshole. He's just sitting there fishing half the time.
You know, someday there should be a Big the Cat spinoff where it turns out that that really the real fight is just to land the world's biggest Billy Bass fish. Ooh, speaking of which, Billy Bass.
They could do a cross-promotional tie with Bass Pro Fishing Shops. They have that pyramid in Memphis now, right? You guys don't know what I'm talking about, do you?
I do not. I was looking up Big Mouth Billy Bass because it's one of my favorite weird things of the 90s.
Yeah, so they built this giant pyramid in Memphis, Tennessee, and now it's currently occupied by a Bass Pro Fishing Shop. It's like the flagship location now of that company.
It's kind of like that Simpsons episode where Homer finds the golf pro shop on top of that giant pyramid.
I think that actually might be what it's referencing, but I can't remember when Bass Pro took over that pyramid.
Mm.
Either way, it might also be a case of art imitating life. just like how The Simpsons predicted President Trump in a kind of scary way. Which means we're getting President Lisa Simpson next, so I'm actually kind of stoked. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask one question first, because just normally I would have asked this later on, but you did kind of set this up, because I was thinking for a while about you mentioned Trump, and I was thinking of one of the sort of weird failed rivals to The Apprentice, specifically
The Benefactor?
No, The Money and the Power, which is essentially a ripoff that was produced by and starred 50 Cent. And the idea was in The Money and the Power was that it was supposed to be you were supposed to do it was essentially The Apprentice, except you were supposed to be the world's toughest gangster, but except it was somehow even lower rent and kind of more ridiculous. So a lot of the ways you'd be the best gangster is to make sure your team had the best and did the best in relay races. And that made me wonder if there's like a relay competition you're thinking of.
I'm not really thinking of a relay.
No, it's okay.
Race. Oh, you mean like video game characters would be best at a relay race?
Yeah.
Well, 50 Cent, because he's already a video game character. He's doing video games. Yeah, he's didn't he have Bulletproof and then Blood of the Sand, which was like a ridiculous third-person military shooter starring 50 Cent?
Excuse me, Blood on the Sand, a third-person military Gears of War-style shooter starring 50 Cent, who is attempting to search for his diamond-encrusted skull.
Oh my gosh, yes. You know what I've actually heard about the game? It's completely ridiculous and over the top, but it's actually not terrible.
I played a couple levels. It was mediocre, I guess.
Okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, it's a co-op game, and your co-op partner is one member of G-Unit, because you can choose from one of three. So you can choose
it's amazing.
DJ Who Kid, Tony Yayo, and I forget the third one because I don't really think about G-Unit at all.
Oh my god.
This is incredible. But let's actually try to answer this question seriously. Which video game characters do you think would be best at a relay race? Because it's not only about being fast. It's about being good in a team as well.
I gotta say, you mentioned team, and to me the obvious one then is Commander Shepard.
She'd be good at this.
Yeah, I think she pulled off the suicide mission. I think she could pull off a relay race. You make sure that, you know, Morden takes care of the survivors. Garrus leads up the team in the first go around.
Yeah, I think she'd be good at leading the team. Andy, who do you want to see run a relay race?
I'd like to see Toe Jam and Earl run a relay race. I think they'd do a great job.
Oh, yes!
Yeah, see, they would just collect presents along the way, right? And, put on their rocket skates or use the spring shoes to jump forward. Or maybe they just find the warp and it would just take them right to the end of the relay race. I mean, really anything could happen with Toe Jam and Earl. I think they'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be down for that. Like, you can think of pretty much any sort of famous video game duo. I think it would be good. Like, Mario and Luigi would probably pull it off.
Oh, yeah, of course. I think so.
Ratchet and Clank, Jack and Daxter.
Rayman and Globox.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was going to say the two douchebags from Army of Two. Nobody needs to play that game.
What about Kane and Lynch? I've never played the game, but
No?
They wouldn't do good? Okay.
No, I'm just saying no. I just want to say no.
Just no to Kane and Lynch in general?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't even know what Kane and Lynch is about. I've just heard it's not very good.
It's basically, you know, that like era where there was like a huge glut of like really shitty Tarantino ripoff movies?
Mm-hmm.
Like Boondock Saints.
Well, I kind of like that one, but I know what you're going for.
Yeah, that was kind of like that, but if you gave it like if you tried to make it like really like edgy, but in that like early 2000s Shadow the Hedgehog Slipknot sense of edgy.
Where Shadow the Hedgehog actually says "damn it" in one of the video games, and it was a big deal.
Whoa!
Okay. Also, I'll be linking that too.
Okay.
I got a fun story about the word "damn it." So, when I was in third grade, that's when the first Ninja Turtles movie came out. And one kid saw it, and we were like, oh my god, like, how is this movie? How is it? He's like, it's so good. It's so good, you guys. And guess what? Raphael, he says, damn. And we were like, what? No way. He cussed. So, anyway.
Yeah, that's
that was weird. A big deal in third grade.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say damn in third grade. I mean, no. Now I say it all the time. Because I'm an adult and I can say whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah, fuck you, Mom. Sorry.
I love you, Mom. Please don't take away my podcast. I think she has no idea this exists.
Anyway, I have no idea where we are, other than to say that Kane and Lynch would be a terrible relay race, because what they'd do is they'd argue for a while and then cause a bunch of people to die, and then they would sort of basically grab the relay, and then it would suck, and you'd end up causing GameStop to fire a journalist for writing a written negative review.
Oh, yeah. What's his face? Jeff Gerstmann resigned from GameSpot over that whole controversy.
Weird.
Which is actually one of the few such controversies in video games. Which is actually remarkably good. People think that, video game journalism has all sorts of problems, but the fact that this is like the big video game review controversy, and it happened a long time ago and really hasn't happened since, is actually a pretty good, healthy sign that reviews are generally not bought and paid for. Reviews have all sorts of other issues, don't get me wrong, but,
it's weird, like, to think about, like, the big example being this thing that happened in, 2006, 2008?
Yeah, it was a while back, Giant Bomb has existed for many years now, so. It's really, like, a distant memory, for sure.
Sorry, didn't mean to take up the space with the relay race joke.
Oh, no, that's good. I shouldn't be the only one coming up with these ridiculous ideas. I mean, I have a whole list, but please ask some of your own ridiculous scenarios as well.
Since we're on the subject, I got one. Which video game character would be the best video game journalist?
Ooh. Like, I would say Jade from Beyond Good and Evil, but she's too good to be wasted on video games.
Well, also, she's already a journalist.
Yeah, so that kind of ruins it.
It would have to be someone who can write. I feel like, you know what? I'm going to go say Manny from Beyond Good and Evil. Manny from Grim Fandango.
Okay.
If he gets his job done on time, he's able to, commiserate with people of, different social strata.
I feel like, that could work. You know who I was thinking of? Hat Kid from A Hat in Time. We know she can write because we've seen her pick up a pen and write stuff. And she seems to be interested in games. And she seems to have sort of this irrepressible joy that I think works well for people who are into video games. I think she'd be a good video game journalist. I'd be down for that. Andy, do you have any thoughts on which video game character you'd like to see write about video games?
I was thinking about it as you were talking, and for some reason, Sonny Funny from Parappa the Rapper came in my head.
All right. I'm not super familiar with that franchise, but does Sonny Funny do?
Sonny Funny, she's this flower. She's like Parappa's girlfriend, pretty much. He pines after her in the first game, and then in the second game they're together, but then he makes fun of her cooking, and he has to spend basically the whole game proving that he's not a baby. Anyway.
So Parappa the Rapper is a dog, and yes. Sonny Funny is a flower. How does that work?
It's video game logic. Everything works.
Okay.
But the reason I say that is because in the last stage of the second Parappa game, Sonny has this song, and it's kind of like a music video, and you see that she's kind of been in the background of all of the stages, that Parappa's been there kind of observing and watching him grow as a person. So I think she has a very good eye for detail, and I think because her whole song is about how he's kind of grown over time, so I think she would be good at being able to play a game and see its strengths and its weaknesses, because she doesn't just give Parappa a free pass. She's like, you still got your problems, but we, we're a couple and we're in love, and so we're going to work through them, because you still have some great things about you. So I think she'd be very fair writing up her reviews of games, and she'd call them out on their bullshit, and then she'd praise them when they did something right. So,
all right, I that is that's a good case for Sonny Funny.
Yes.
All right, which video game character do you think would be best at hosting Thanksgiving dinner?
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cooking Mama.
Oh,
that's a pretty obvious one, but it's a good one.
There you go.
Solid one.
Yeah.
Huh.
I think maybe somebody from The Sims, if you got their cooking level really high, I think they'd be a great host.
A little bit unconventional. What about Sam Fisher?
I'm not saying I don't believe you. I just don't see
how
the logic here. But please elaborate.
Sure. You see, because the thing with Thanksgiving, you said host, and the thing with like hosting is it's more than just cooking. Because you know, because ideally, you know, it's Thanksgiving, multiple people will cook. You see, in these like very anxious times, these very like politically kind of stressful times, I think you need someone who can make sure that everyone stays like calm and safe. And I think is what like what Sam Fisher would do. I think he would, you know, make sure that under threat of Trank shooting, that everyone just, you know, stayed calm.
Yeah, I think I can see that. He's not a very polarizing figure. People don't go up to Sam. People don't like hang out with Sam Fisher and come out feeling worse generally, right?
And you know, he's got a daughter, so who I think may have been murdered, but that's what happens in every video game with every character who has kids. So
yeah. So I don't know. Maybe he's the one who needs comfort on Thanksgiving. So maybe he throws Thanksgiving because he's lost his daughter. And he needs his surrogate family to help him through the tough times.
So really as it turns out, Splinter Cell was really about the real Splinter Cell was the family.
It was the family all along, yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't that this year's episode of Bob's Burgers? What the hell is the plumber's name? I'm drawing a blank.
I have no idea, sorry.
Fuck me, why can't I remember?
Bob's Burgers Plumber. Come on, Google, help me out here. Bob's Burgers.
Everyone at home listening is like, it's this, you son of a bitch, how do you not know? Oh my god. Anyway.
Linda Belcher voiced by John Robert. No, that can't be it.
It's not. No, that's Bob's wife. God damn it.
Yeah, I was going to say, that makes no sense.
Plumber from Bob's Burgers. God damn it. Bosworth's plumber.
Fuck you, Google. Horace?
No. Teddy.
Teddy, okay. Teddy.
Thank
Sorry.
God. Thank God we took so much time looking that up. I apologize.
That's all right.
Anyway,
I typed Bob's Burgers plumber to Google. The first result shouldn't be Linda Belcher.
Yeah. Anyways, that was
Fuck you, Google.
Thanksgiving episode this year for Bob's Burgers. Teddy hasn't seen his family. He hates his... He thinks his house is disgusting, and it turns out he's a hoarder. And then his family, you know, he basically realizes that Bob and his family is his real family, and you know, comes to terms with that. So anyway, you can edit all this out. I apologize.
This is no, we'll keep it in. Teddy is the Sam Fisher of Fox cartoons.
There we go.
That's what we've concluded.
Definitive
today.
Confirmation: Bob's Burgers is a stealth sequel to Splinter Cell.
I can't see anything wrong with that.
I mean, we know it's a stealth sequel to Archer, so...
Right.
So, you know who I think would be good at hosting Thanksgiving? Liara from Mass Effect, because she's good at organizing things. I think she'd be good at this. I mean, you'd have to be careful. She might provide food with the wrong amino acid chirality, and that might kill you, but...
Actually, Merv, it is only the Turians and the Quarians who have the dextro amino acids.
I love how you added the extra nerdy voice for that. I can't remember which ones are dextro and which ones are levo, okay? I haven't played Mass Effect in years. I skipped Andromeda, as everybody should.
The Conan O'Brien thing where you push up the fake glasses and wave your finger around when you were doing
the... No, because of the headphones.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And also, I think Wolfman has real glasses.
I do, yeah.
So Liara would be fine. She'd just screw over the Turians and Quarians. Actually, I think Liara would account for that, and she would label all the food. She'd be like, this is the Dexter chicken, and this is the Levo chicken.
Hey.
So, you know we'd be good on that front.
Yeah. Well, back to TV. You know who Liara reminds me of is on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Amy, Jake's girlfriend on that show. If you guys watch
yeah.
that.
Yeah. She is the Amy of Mass Effect.
Yeah.
Well, Mass Effect came first, so Amy's really the Liara of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yes. Which, again, stealth sequel to Mass Effect, obviously, Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah. Does that mean Jake is Commander Shepard or Joker?
Oh.
I would say
Shepard, honestly.
Well, what would you say, Wolfman?
I was going to say that Jake is, and it's been a while since I watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Jake is Joker. Holt is Shepard. I think okay. Andy's got that right. Jeffries is Garrus.
Jeffords, you mean? Jeffords, yeah.
Yeah, Jeffords. Sorry, yeah, Jeffords is Garrus. Santiago is Liara. I think Diaz is probably Jack.
I would go with Jack too, yeah.
Yeah.
And Boyle is who's trying to think of someone who's
Mortis. He's Mortis.
Morden Solis?
Yes, Morden Solis. The
yeah.
guy.
Solarian dude. I was gonna say he's more of a is there any Volus guy? Like, I feel like Boyle is a Volus.
They never give the Volus any real stuff because they're all like kind of really kind
just
of
inherently goofy.
I was gonna say in kind of mean-spirited Jewish caricatures.
Okay, yeah, that too. Maybe not like Star Wars Episode One.
They've never put a Volus in a real non kind of goofy role. They do that with a lot of the species that aren't used in like shootouts.
So.
Why are there like that's the problem? Why aren't there Hanar helping me out like shooting Reapers?
Presumably, this is because EA has certain demands for how much time you can allot to different character models.
Yeah,
but I want to shoot a gun at bad guys for you.
But this one wants to shoot a gun. Sorry.
I was also just going to say, to finish up the Brooklyn Nine-Nine comparison, I think obviously Hitchcock and Scully have to be one of your innumerable, like, completely instantly forgotten, like, squad mates, like Mess Sergeant Gardner or Kenneth and Donnelly.
No, they're the two in the first Mass Effect game. God, what are their goddamn names? You choose one of them to live and one of them to die. It's a guy.
Ashley and Caden.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. You know what? They're better than Caden and Ashley.
You think so?
Nobody likes Caden or Ashley.
I really dislike both.
No one likes Hitchcock or Scully either.
I like Hitchcock. Or when I watched the show, I liked Hitchcock and Scully just in like a Jerry from Parks and Rec kind of way.
I could see that. You know, also, what's Chelsea Peretti's character's name?
Oh,
Gina.
Gina.
Yeah.
Edie or is she Miranda? I think Edie.
I don't know. Now that I think about it, I think
yeah, she's more of an Edie.
She's Joker. Peralta is Shepard, and then Holt is Anderson.
Yeah, that works.
There we go. We figured it out.
That works. Although I wish there were sarcastic dialogue options a la Dragon Age 2, so Jake could really be Shepard. Jake is more like if sarcastic Hawk were transported into the Mass Effect world. All right, moving on.
Glad we got that all figured out.
Yeah. Which video game character do you think would be best at distracting a cashier while you shoplift? Let's assume that you actually shoplift things.
I've got a few ideas. I'm just going to get the really quick one out of the way. The one gambler character in Pokemon who says, "Whoops, drop my balls."
Oh, God. All right. Okay. That's enough Pokemon. That's enough internet for one day.
Yeah. All right. I'll do for that.
That's enough of that. Okay. Moving on. Andy, do you have any suggestions?
I think I'm going to choose this character not because I think she would want to help me, but I think she would distract them long enough, and that is Amy from Sonic. I think she would just talk to the cashiers so much and just kind of get on their nerves and kind of like annoy them that I can just start picking things off the shelf. Like, oh, okay, you know, I'm gonna take this Zag nut or whatever, and nobody's gonna know because he's going, oh God, please stop talking to me.
Okay, so now we've got your thoughts on Amy as well. Yeah, killed two birds with one stone there. I don't know whom I'd pick for this. I didn't think about the answers to any of these. I just wrote them all down.
Is size an issue? Like it doesn't have to be a person who can reasonably like take up a normal human space in like a human building.
Let's say no and see where you're going with this.
Because I was going to go with I don't know I'm actually not familiar how much either of you played Dark Souls.
Not at all, sorry.
So there's an early game boss in the first Dark Souls called the Gaping Dragon. And the reason it's called that is because it's a dragon-like creature, because dragons are all dead in Dark Souls, and basically it's the like most of its body is cut open. So essentially it's a dragon that opens up as a mouth. I'm suggesting, you know, he just kind of walks in, doesn't need to do that much, you know, just looks for the, like, to see what flavor of Hal's throat lozenges there are, maybe, you know, pick up one of those corn dogs you get at the Wawa, and, you know, that's all you need to do.
Yeah, if anything looks sufficiently grotesque, I think it works as a distraction. You know whom I was going to suggest for this? The kid from Golf Story who steals the, I think, donut and yells, "Sucked in!" and runs off.
What?
Sucked in is kind of like the Australian equivalent of ha ha.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. It's kind of like a Nelson Muntz ha ha.
Yeah. Was...
Yeah. So that kid would be a good distraction. A little bit less grotesque than the weird half dragon you just described, but I think he still works. All right, let's see what other ideas we have here. Which video game character do you think would be best at selling a used car?
No, you go first. I've got a couple. Oh, I've got one idea. I'll think of another one.
I'm gonna go with Jesus. I don't know, man.
You know, I think I actually have a decent idea for this. I actually think Joker from Mass Effect would be good at selling a used car because he's got kind of that. He's got kind of that smarm that you need to sell used cars, and he's also kind of good at convincing people of things. He's got that kind of personality. I think he'd be a good used car salesman. What do you guys think?
I've got one for who's not a good car salesman.
Okay, who would be a bad car salesman?
Anybody from Street Fighter 2.
I think this got over my head. But...
Okay.
One of the bonus stages in Street Fighter 2 is you have to beat the shit out of a car. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Now I get this. All right. Well, Finn, you have suggestions.
Okay, this is going to be a little bit harder because I'm going to need to use a visual aid in this. So I'm going to use the chat. And this could go either way. But
we'll
dump
this in the link dump.
Yeah, so, you know, there have been, you know, multiple games that have shown appearances by President Richard Nixon, who in the 1968 election often was... there was a rival poster, I believe, by the Herbert Humphrey campaign saying, "Would you buy a used car from this man?" And that's the extent of my joke.
Okay.
There you go.
So I guess Herbert Humphrey would be... No, there's got to be a video game with Herbert Humphrey in it somewhere, right?
Yeah. No, but I think Nixon would be a pretty good like used car salesman because he'd, you know, get you with the madman theory that like you have to buy this car from him, otherwise it will explode.
I think that could work. He apparently has some diplomatic skills. He renormalized relations with China. So, go Nixon.
Yeah,
and that's the first time you'll ever hear that anywhere.
Hey, Nixon had some good ideas, everybody.
Okay. I'm claiming a Canadian exemption for any insensitive American things I've said.
Ah, fuck us. Who cares?
if Nixon didn't work out, you could just go with Rusty Slugger, the Nintendo character who basically haggles with you for the price of microtransactions, which is the best use of microtransactions ever.
Oh,
that's actually, yeah, Rusty from Rusty's Real Deal. That guy would be amazing because he haggling is built into the game.
Nice.
Yeah, I'd be down for that.
I was gonna say, when you mentioned Nintendo, Mr. Rossetti came up in my mind as well. He would just browbeat you until you bought a car.
Yeah, that could work. That could work. Let's see what else we got on this list. Which video game character do you think would be best at editing the AV Club, the site from which we sort of spun off?
Oh, wow. Who's what's the name of the main character from that game, Oxenfree? The girl.
Not Ren. I forget her name.
I don't know. Yeah, whatever her name is. The main character in Oxenfree.
I don't remember any of their names. But yeah, that makes sense.
She's very, witty and smarmy, I guess, depending on what dialogue choices you make. She's got a kind of an interesting grasp on pop culture, so I'd go with her. That's kind of my serious answer.
Okay. If we're going with games in that vein, I think Max is probably not cool enough. Max from Life is Strange. But Rachel Amber was probably super cool. And I think she could probably edit the AV Club. I would suggest Chloe, but she's a little too volatile and would probably post, ridiculous offensive rants on the AV Club. So we got to get somebody a little more low-key.
I've never played the game. I mean, here it's great, but I just – maybe this is just – me being this, but I feel like they would just turn the AV Club into Jezebel. I don't know how is that fair? Or am
I feel like they actually would. I don't think they would. I feel like as far as Jezebel being sort of mean spirited, there are characters in that game that would be a little bit more like that. The game definitely has a feminist bent, but the AV Club is a fairly feminist kind of website, and I think they would write about pop culture through a feminist lens without being offensive or weird or occasionally racist like Jezebel. So,
all right, there we go. Yeah. I should play it anyway. I hear it's a great game. So,
yeah,
I've got one possibility, and again, I know I keep going with these out there suggestions. Well, I've got actually two ideas. One is kind of more legitimate and not super ridiculous, and I'm going to start with that, and that would be Edith Finch.
Huh.
A lot of curation.
She has a very strong voice. I don't know to what extent that would apply to pop culture, but I can see that.
That might work. She might have worked better for the journalism question, but I think she'd work well as an editor too, because that's basically the book or the game. The out there suggestion is Agent 47
from Hitman.
Yeah, because you see,
he'd kill all the writers we don't like.
No. Because think about it this way: Hitman is all about perfection, right? It's about constantly redoing these kills again and again, becoming the perfect assassin, seeing death and opportunity in every single wake, trying to be, the best at being
the very best that no one ever was.
Yeah, you were the one who said to stop doing the Pokemon, so I'm going with Hitman.
There's no ban on Pokemon.
No, I know.
Gary from Pokemon should run the AV Club.
Because basically
he definitely should not. But I can see this. This is a good case for Agent 47. Yeah. He's essentially an editor. He gets people to go through three or four or five drafts of death.
Yeah,
essentially.
And also, it's worth noting he's a polyglot. He can kill someone with raw sushi. He can kill someone with explosives. He can kill someone with weird costumes. He can throw people into a well. This is a guy who knows so many different kinds of death that, if you translated this to the page, I think he'd know all about really, the best way to use idioms, the best way to use different kinds of grammatical structure.
And well, it might also be that he just knows about different media very well. So he knows about books, he knows about music, he knows about movies, he knows about web series. You know, he's all over the map in terms of what he knows.
Got to know it all so that he can pull ideas from each of these different mediums in his different ways to kill people.
You know what? Exactly. I bet he's the kind of person who only likes to absorb art through just Wikipedia articles.
That's probably, yeah, so he probably just like...
quick and concise.
He has basically like an iPad. That's when he gets back to his home.
Okay, this is like the Leonard Pierce of killing.
So I've got something to
add. That's a reference for you old-time AV clubbers.
I've got something to add to that. For assistant editors, if we're going for the redoing your levels over and over again after dying, so we've got Meat Boy from Super Meat Boy, assistant editor. Ooh. And then Madeline from the game Celeste that just came out, other assistant editor.
Oh, if we're going down that road, the ninja from N.
Oh, yeah, that guy too. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, and the protagonist from Hotline Miami.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, and also cool. that person would be very good at 80s week.
Yeah, they would. There we go. We just restaffed the entire AB club, so there you go. It's back.
Yeah.
It's back and de-Kinjified.
Yeah. And Sean actually,
nobody can ever get rid of Kinja. It is forever. All right, let's move on to something. Since we're getting into slightly controversial territory, let's do something really bizarre. Which video game character do you think would make the best porn star?
Just so we're clear, I think we should start just by making a blanket ban on anyone from like a porn game, anyone from like Leisure Suit Larry.
Not Leisure Suit Larry.
Like no one who has actually had an actual sex scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we should also ban Lara Croft because there's a lot of that already out there. So, not that I know, but you know, I'm just saying I've heard.
Oh, all I know is the triangle boob cosplay, which is a thing now.
Oh, is it really? That's great.
Yeah, so somebody cosplayed Lara Croft, but put like a triangular prism over her chest to like cosplay old school Lara Croft, which I think is hilarious.
I love it. That's great.
You go, woman. You did that, and it's amazing.
Oh man. Okay. So I'll go back to Sonic because why not? Big the Cat, I think, would be a really funny porn star. He would come out with that Ron Jeremy kind of feel.
I can see that.
And he's got the name, Big the Cat, so.
That works. Porn star. That works extremely well. I would suggest Knuckles, but I think he's a little bit too angry for porn.
Yeah, he'd do the kind of porn that you don't want to watch. I certainly wouldn't want to watch that.
Going away from, you know, I'm starting to think, you know,
God damn it.
I don't want to go with characters who, you know, whom I, you know, be to my own taste or predilection. So, you know, I want to be a little more open. And so I think, you know, you mentioned Ron Jeremy, and I think, you know, there's an area for sleaze. And so I think Wario, he already has, you know, a whole history of running his own businesses. I think he could, you know, expand into adult entertainment.
Yeah, plus some people are into farting, so it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Wario would work. Do you think he'd, like, tag-team people with Waluigi? Think
yes.
That's what he'd do? Okay.
But you'd have to pay extra for those videos.
They really... microtransactions are entering the world of adult entertainment. Okay. You know, I haven't thought super hard about this, but I think Earthworm Jim would be a great porn star.
Better not.
And just to stick it to Doug Tennaple, he'd be a gay porn star.
I was just going to say that. He'd have to be a gay porn star.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Earthworm, because he can get into all sorts of spaces. So very flexible, that man, for sure. So yeah, Earthworm Jim.
Yeah.
There should be so much seriously pondering this. After this podcast.
Okay. Moving away from the porn theme, or depending on how you look at this, continue with the porn theme. Who do you think would be the best video game character for unclogging a drain?
And also, no Mario characters. I mean, come on. We got to at least.
Yeah, try. I know.
Give them a chance. No plumbers. I mean, to be fair, I don't think they've ever unclogged a single drain. All they've done is travel down the pipes.
No, in the RPGs they do. And, of course, Luigi debuted in Mario Brothers, where it's okay. It's not really. Does it count as unclogging the pipes when you're trying to kill crabs and turtles that are infesting the pipes?
Well, yeah. I mean, they're both pest control and plumbing control at the same time. Yeah.
And it's also worth noting, you know, right around that time, they also got into the demolition business. Mario started as a carpenter, you know.
Right. He's been a referee. I mean, come on.
Mario starts kind of like Jesus in that way.
Yeah, no, Mario is a video game Jesus. No, that's not true. He's more of a...
Super Mario Brothers is the stealth sequel to the Bible, called it.
We're going to have to edit this podcast so much. This is so many offensive things.
That was just an errant thought. Do not take this as gospel. Either literal or figurative gospel.
Okay. All right.
Who's going to unclog the drain, though?
Who would unclog the drain? Big the cat. No.
Go with Ratchet from Ratchet and Clank, right?
Yeah, that could work.
I think he'd be okay at it. I mean, are you just talking about like a simple clog? Like, oh, yeah, you know, the toilet backed up and you just get the plunger and just who's good at plunging? Or you just like, you need somebody to go in there and like get the snake and they have to like use the camera to like see where the clog is down the pipe? Like, how deep are we going on this?
I'd say it's a clog that you can't unclog yourself with a plunger. It's a stubborn clog. You know what it's just the rats from Bad Rats. I think they'd do it, because, I mean, what do? They're basically in a really janky, incredible machine ripoff, right? It seems like they would be able to construct a really janky machine that would get rid of the clog.
I don't think I know that game.
It's infamous for being one of the worst games on Steam, and it turned into a meme. People started gifting it to each other as a joke.
All right, there you go.
Yeah, so yeah, the rats from Bad Rats, I think, would unclog the drain. Wolfman, any thoughts on drain unclogging? Wolfman died.
No, I'm back. I'm sorry. I turned off my mic too, just because I didn't want to make sounds while I was looking stuff up. Sorry.
Oh yeah, that's fine.
What I was saying was that, actually, you kind of put me on this idea because you had joked about Big the Cat, but I started to actually think, like, you know, maybe someone with a fishing rod isn't that bad of an idea for, you know, for using it almost like a plumbing snake, which is what then led me to look up what are different kinds of fishing games, and that reminded me that the reality show Deadliest Catch has a mediocre to bad video game based on it called Sea of Chaos.
So I'm Sea of Chaos? Oh my god. So it's like a JRPG.
So I'm going to say the generic main character from Deadliest Catch, Sea of Chaos. Because...
All right. Oh god. Okay. This is actually a really good idea. Sorry. I still can't get over the fact that it's called Sea of Chaos.
I know! Is he standing on the gotta find this. Sword?
Oh my god, I have to play this game now.
Okay, I'm getting the link address for it.
Okay, we gotta play this.
This is gonna end up being literally the weirdest, like, show notes we've ever had.
This is one of the most bizarre episodes we've done, for sure. Okay, a couple more before we close this up. Which video game character do you think would be the best at writing the next great American novel, and don't say Alan Wake?
Well, I wouldn't, because Alan Wake is a terrible writer.
True that. You know who I think would write a good novel? His name is Jimmy, right? The main character from Bully.
Yeah.
Oh, Jimmy Hopkins?
Yeah, I think he would write... He does have that sort of literary... That game is very sort of literary and poetic, mm-hmm. in a way. It's this grand sort of tale about a school. And I feel like Jimmy would be great when he grows up at writing a novel loosely based on his school experiences.
I think, yeah.
That's a good one.
I think that. I think also going this isn't my answer, but going on that route, I think Nico Bellic would also be a pretty good writer for that.
Yeah, I think he'd be writing about like a distinctly American, like the immigrant experience, right? He'd be writing about something that's sort of distinctly American, in a way that I wouldn't get, say, from the GTA 5 characters.
God, you don't think so? I was going to say, I was just going to continue the GTA train. I think Michael from GTA 5 could become maybe not a great American novelist, but I feel like he has enough stories in him to become like a really like pulpy crime novelist.
You know what?
I could see that.
He would be great as like kind of a slightly lower rent Dean Koontz.
Like a Sidney Sheldon type. Yeah, for sure.
And they even kind of allude to that if you haven't got through the game, sorry, but there's his psychiatrist basically is going to take his story and turn it into a screenplay, and your mission is to chase him down and kill your psychiatrist before he is able to, you know, before he's the one who can make the money off of your life story instead of yourself. So.
Oh God, this game is so nihilistic and cynical.
It's really not. I really did not care for it.
I only got about a third of the way through. I'm sorry.
Well, hey, different strokes. I loved Grand Theft Auto V, but maybe it's
not. It's certainly like I admire it as a technical achievement for sure. It's just I could not take the tone.
Maybe you have to grow up in Southern California to get some of it too, because it's very Southern California based.
Yeah, instead of moving, like I moved there as an adult, and I think maybe I'd see it better as if I'd actually grown up here as opposed to in the cold, snowy north. But yeah, that I could see him as a sort of writer. Maybe not like what we'd see as the great American novel, but I could definitely see Michael as a writer. Any other suggestions you guys have for...
Well, technically, this competition has already been won because 50 Cent actually wrote a book called The 50th Law, which is one of those weird self-help books about how to be the most greatest gangster.
That's a non-fiction.
That's non-fiction.
Yeah. I guess.
Just like Blood on the Sand, also non-fiction. Sorry, Wolfman, what were you saying?
It's because you're kind of getting me on, you know, great American novel. And initially, because I was thinking...
Doesn't have to be American.
Because initially I was thinking, you know, going up the Michael route, I was thinking, you know, like maybe Ganondorf from Zelda. Like, you know, lived for like thousands of years. He's seen stuff, you know. But that also then made me think of, you know what, the chief from This Is the Police. It's kind of an easy answer, I guess, because it kind of falls in the same vein as Michael and Jimmy. I forget his name. He's the like corrupt police chief in This Is the Police.
Okay, yeah, we can look it up. What his name is later. Mm-hmm. I feel like somebody who's seen a lot of stuff could deal with it.
Yeah, the agent in Virginia.
She would write an amazing novel. That movie is sort of I shouldn't say that movie. It is very cinematic. That game is also kind of novelistic. It's almost like have any of you ever read like a Michael Ondaatje novel?
No.
Okay. Well, Michael Ondaatje is Canadian, so maybe it's not the best point of comparison. But he does write these very sort of surreal, oneric kind of novels that jump around in time, kind of like Virginia does. So a lot of flashbacks within flashbacks and that sort of stuff. And they're all these his novels are very much about identity and the extent to which we construct it versus the extent to which it's imposed upon us. And that's sort of the same themes that Virginia deals with. So I can see the sort of a nameless agent from Virginia writing a novel very much in the name of Michael, very much in the vein of Michael Ondaatje.
I guess the other, for like kind of a weird curveball answer, Francis York Morgan from Deadliest Premonition, or from Deadly Premonition.
Oh, for sure. He would write a bizarre novel for sure. Actually, I think, what's his partner's name?
Zach?
The lady.
Oh.
No, the lady.
Let's see.
Is it Emily?
Yeah, I believe it's...
I can't remember.
I want to say it's Emily Wyatt.
Yeah, we can look it up. I think she would write a good novel, too, about her experiences. Because she's sort of on the sidelines instead of experiencing it directly. So I think she'd have sort of a better observational bent on it.
Yeah.
All right, one last one before we call this to a close. Which video game character do you think would be the best Jeopardy contestant? I'm going to throw this out there. I'm going to say it's Morden.
God damn it.
Mass Effect.
No, I'm glad you did, because I was wanting to find like a different answer. But yeah, no, that would be a very good answer. That would be, yeah.
Yeah. Also, Liara knows a bunch of shit. So maybe her. Or if you want somebody, if you want like a Watson equivalent, Glyph from Mass Effect. Because he just knows everything, right? I mean, he's also annoying as shit. Like, yeah. Literally every time he opened his mouth, I would just say, shut up, Glyph. So, yeah. He's just as annoying as Watson.
I have one idea that may make you mad. And so if it does, then I'll try to find another idea.
I don't get angry that easily. So let's see.
It would be Dr. Quack from Yooka-Laylee, the creator of one of the most irritating and aggravating trivia quiz mini games I've played in God knows how long.
Oh, so he'd be like Alex Trebek, annoying, smarmy, and smug.
Yeah.
Okay. We found a video game Trebek.
You want a video game Trebek? This just came up. What about Gladys from Portal? She could take over for Trebek, I think, very well.
Yeah. She would be good at berating the contestants for messing up.
And then she can drop them into a pit of fire when they lose.
Oh, that'd be a great incentive not to get negative money. Imagine if you lost, you just got like you got the same fate as the companion cube.
Right.
Oh, if only. No. But it does make me flash back to that. Since we are talking about Jeopardy, we of course have to include the clip of Wolf Blitzer failing at Jeopardy.
The thing I get from that clip is that Andy Richter is actually really smart. That's the key thing there.
Oh, no.
Wolf Blitzer, dumb as shit. For sure. Any other thoughts on who would be a good Jeopardy contestant?
I have a real answer.
Okay.
Psycho Mantis. From Metal Gear Solid.
Huh. I'm not super familiar with the Metal Gear franchise. What would make this character good?
Psycho Mantis is a... as his name says, he has psychic powers. He is a secret agent who has gone rogue, goes rogue as a terrorist, and as one of the, like, the group of sort of gone rogue boss characters in Metal Gear Solid. And his special power is... It's telepathy. And when I say telepathy, I mean he can read your game card, your memory card, and can read your controller inputs.
Ooh, wow. Okay, yeah.
So in
when I first saw that.
Oh yeah, because basically, so the gimmick is that, and first off, when he talks to you, he reads your game card to see if you played any Konami games or a few other games. Because Konami released, like, no games on the GameCube, so it just had to be Nintendo games for the remake, the Twin Snakes. And then you fight him, and then you can't shoot him because you have to plug your controller into the different controller port.
Yeah, it's strange that, like, these, like, Metal Gear games have innovated in the sense that they've made you do things sort of physically in space that wasn't directly related to inputs that you normally put directly into a video game.
Yeah.
And
wasn't one of the puzzles in the first Metal Gear that there was a radio frequency that you had to call, and it was on the back of your game case, right?
Isn't that what that was? That's after the first battle against Revolver Ocelot, who is a, just so we're clear, a sadomasochistic Russian weird conspirator, secret agent, former KGB or GRU soldier who... secretly is funded a black ops group in Afghanistan that was later co-opted by the American military, and then secretly trying to work to create a world where everyone's a soldier. And look, Metal Gear Solid is really complicated. Yeah, no, it's awesome. Except as it went on and it became clear that Kojima lost interest in doing the series.
Yeah. It definitely went to some strange places, although it does have things to say about military intervention.
Oh yeah,
is my understanding.
It is. It's it has. It's actually really. I genuinely find it to be incredibly ambitious in scope. It's just frustrating that it ended and kind of like lagged on for a huge chunk of its life. It basically kind of being forced into existence by inertia. After the
Now there are zombies.
Yes, there are. Basically, after Metal Gear Solid 3, which is a prequel and, in my opinion, the best game in the series, for a number of reasons, Kojima essentially lost a lot of interest and felt like he had to make it. Konami was giving him less leeway into doing stuff that wasn't Metal Gear.
Yeah, I can see why he left in the end.
Yeah.
We'll see how Death Stranding turns out. It's either... I'm not sure it's going to be a good game, but it's going to be...
It will be.
I think it's going to be a fascinating mess.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting game, and I think, you know, oftentimes interesting games are more exciting than strictly good, than mechanically good ones.
At least from the perspective of discourse and like discussing games, I think. The interesting failures are sometimes more better to discuss than competent successes, let's say. All right, any other scenarios you want to subject video game characters to before we call this to a close?
Andy, because I have one I didn't want to like go first if you had one.
I don't, but I can come up with one if you want me to.
I mean, I have one idea.
Why don't you come up with one while Wolfman says his then?
Okay, so, you know, it's actually, because I was, some people know on the Avocado that I... I'm a volunteer teacher, and I, you know, do different classes. And a few weeks ago, I did a class on the ancient Olympics because, you know, the Olympics were over. We just went through them, and that's why
they ended recently.
Yeah,
that's part of the inspiration for this segment, by the way.
Yeah, and so
Go ahead.
And so it made me think about, like, you know, because in the ancient Olympics and the modern Olympics, there's different types. Like running is a huge thing. Running, wrestling, boxing, those were like these classic ones. But then there was the idea of the pentathlon. You know, they do five games at once. And now now in modern times, it's changed to the decathlon. And those are things like, you know, discus throwing, long jumps, high jumps. And it made me think that what if we had a decathlon for puzzles? Like a series in which you had to solve a series of puzzles in a row. So, like, you had to do, like, one... You'd, like, have to spend, like, 10 minutes solving, like, a giant physical Tower of Hanoi puzzle. And you had to, like, physically take out all of the rungs.
Okay, yeah, I can see this.
Or, like, a giant sliding block puzzle, like, except you're, like... You're actually physically pushing these giant blocks around.
So you know who could do this would be Commander Shepard, because she did have to solve that Tower of Hanoi puzzle on like Noveria or whatever, and she's pretty strong. Yeah. So, and she might even have biotics to help her.
I should note that I did that. Part of the inspiration from this was less like, you know, what if you actually were in like a Mass Effect? What if someone from Mass Effect actually had to do one of those dumb puzzles, but like as an actual giant tower?
Yeah, I could see it. See, you need somebody who's both smart and strong, and I think Commander Shepard fills the bill.
Yeah.
Fits the bill.
Yeah.
That's how idioms work.
Professor Layton, I think, would be pretty good, but he'd also need his, like, 10-year-old assistant to help him.
Yeah, I could see that. Detective Pikachu. I think he'd do a good job.
Yeah. Because, well, it's just like the Layton thing. He's got that kid who can basically be his, like, brawn
arms,
yeah.
Or he could also just like shock the blocks, right?
Yeah,
although from what I've seen from the trailer, he's pretty useless at actually using his electric attacks, so
yeah, that is a one in the original demo that was kind of the gimmick, was that he didn't actually have any skill as what you'd expect from a Pikachu. And even in the trailer, he literally says, "I'm the brains and you're the brawn."
Oh lord. This game is going to be so bizarre.
I'm so excited. And you know that in the movie, Tom McCarthy's doing script edits? The guy who did...
Who's...
He's the writer-director of Spotlight.
Oh, wow. This is going to be... They're really putting muscle behind this. They've got... who they got? They've got Justice Smith. They've got Ryan Reynolds. They've got a lot of star talent.
It's very... this movie. Yeah, I'm not saying it's going to be good, because I personally think that it's important to, you know, always be... what's the word I'm looking for?
Wary? Keep your expectations in check?
Yeah, and I'm sorry for... You'll hear some noises, listeners, beforehand. Sorry about that. I was just trying to get the trailer ready. I probably should have done that while I was muted. But... Yeah, I generally think it's important to, you know, remain cautiously optimistic, but I don't know. Like, I've started watching Gravity Falls. It's really good, and Alex Hirsch is co-writing the script. I don't know. It just seems like one of those projects that's weird enough that, I don't know, it feels a lot more plausible to me than, like, Duncan Jones doing a Warcraft movie, say.
Yeah, and apparently that it wasn't a great movie, but it didn't turn out awful or anything. So
it was okay.
Yeah, so it's plausible this will turn out good. It's just I'm surprised that there's this much star power behind it. Like, I'm surprised you're putting it this much effort. And maybe it's because Nintendo doesn't like when people use their IPs and do things that are kind of crappy with them. Like, so maybe Nintendo's insistent, like the original Super Mario Brothers movie, which wasn't very good from what I've heard.
It's not good. It's a very, very bad movie, but I genuinely find it fascinating in a way that, like, a lot of bad movies don't, because just to give some example, it was basically made by the couple who did Max Headroom, and they essentially wanted to do, like, a really dark, kind of slightly fetishy dystopia, but, like, it's a Mario movie, so they still have to have, like, giant mushrooms. So it's this really tonally bizarre movie that's kind of like, well, I guess it would be like, what would happen if Mario got stuck in, like, Deus Ex?
That's bizarre. I mean, sometimes doing really tonally weird things can work. Like, you guys know the anime franchise, Lupin the Third. They made an installment of it called The Woman Called Fujiko Mine, which focuses on that character, and it's essentially answering the question, what if Inspector Gadget were an erotic psychological thriller? And it actually works really well. Yeah. So sometimes doing bizarre things can pay off, but you need to know what you're doing. And I don't think they knew what they were doing in this case.
It gives new meaning to the Dr. Claw character.
Oh, God, yeah.
I should also just make one note and say that, like, Super Mario Brothers, like, honestly, in terms of, like, bad Nintendo adaptations, it's got nothing on the Donkey Kong Country cartoon.
That cartoon is so mindless it made me want to shoot myself in the head. It's so bad. It's so, so bad. Don't watch it.
Yeah, if you want to find, like the Super Mario Brothers movie, I think can be, like, very morbidly enjoyable when you see, like, Mojo Nixon playing Toad.
But yeah, there's no way you can get enjoyment out of this cartoon. Used to air on Teletoon up in Canada when I was a kid, and I could not make it through an episode without wanting to strangle all the characters all the time. So yeah, don't watch it. So any other thoughts on who would be good at a video game decathlon with puzzles?
I would go with, I think its name is Vincent, and the Catherine video game. You guys ever play that?
Oh yeah. Ooh,
yeah.
That's a good one.
It's got all the things you're talking about. It's got a big tower. It's got him pulling the blocks and everything. I think he'd do real good at a decathlon.
Yeah. You know who else would be good at this? Would be Qbert, right?
Oh, sure, yeah, I think so. Yeah. Although he's got no arms, so I'm not sure how well he could do, like, discus throwing, unless he sticks it in his snout and, like, spins around and spits it out or something.
Oh, he'd totally do it.
And we used this answer before, but Dr. Eggman.
Is Dr. Eggman actually smart, though?
I feel like, no, but I think he could solve puzzles smart. I don't think he's, like, be competent smart.
Okay, I can see that. Oh, so he's like a scientist, so he can work on all these crazy gadgets, but when it comes to human interaction,
yeah,
he's No so, good.
I mean, mostly I just want to see, like, weird, like, this kind of giant portly man play with, like, Mike Pollack's acting, because that's really one of the few good constants through the Sonic franchise, is his Eggman performance. Kind of like solving these ridiculous giant, like, cartoon puzzles, like he's trapped in, like, a Riddler death trap.
Oh, yeah. I guess Batman would be good at solving these two, but he wouldn't do them with the same kind of style and panache. He'd be really boring at it.
Well, it depends on which Batman. Arkham City, or like the Arkham Batman? Yeah, Brave and the Bold got a video game. I think that Batman would be really rad at that.
Yeah, because the Arkham one would just spray his like bat goo on the wall and then it explode it. Then he'd move on to the next puzzle. He'd be like, I don't have time for this shit. And then he'd just move forward.
Alternatively, Lego Batman.
Like, voiced by Will Arnett.
Well, sure. Well, that one, but no, because there was a video game one. I'm pretty sure he was voiced by Kevin Conroy. Then, whatever the case, he'd be gruff, because that's all Batman voices are gruff.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. I could see Lego Batman kind of solving puzzles. Actually, you know what he'd do? He'd just blast his way through them. Like, even more so than Arkham Batman. He'd be like, I have no time for this. And he'd just, like, shoot his way through. With a blaster.
Well, he would need help from somebody else to pull down the lever while he jumps onto the next platform. So it really would be Batman and, like, you know, I guess Robin.
Yeah, he'd also need, like, Batman. Yeah, he'd also need Mr. Freeze, because there'd be, like, the one token fire puzzle you have to freeze. And then he'd need to have, like, the Joker for the one token puzzle that involves you, like, electrocuting someone.
Guys, Batman works alone.
Except all the times he doesn't.
Yeah. It's so true. Andy, do you have a scenario you want to ask us before we call this a close?
I was kind of thinking it's about this. It's a little similar to what Wolfman said, but maybe who would win a game of Survivor? Like, if there are a bunch of game characters on Survivor, who would win?
Huh. Good question.
Oh, this is something where... Merv, which one is the game where it's, I forget the name, it's like a bunch of kids trapped in like a school and they all...
Danganronpa. It's what I was alluding to earlier with the 16 kids who get kidnapped.
And they all have to like kill each other and only ones can survive.
Yeah, that's Danganronpa.
Okay, and that one, because then one of the characters from that one, because they didn't come here to make friends, they came there to be number one.
That's true. Yeah, to be fair, they were kidnapped there and taken there against their will. So, yeah, I guess one of the protagonists, like, what's his face? Makoto, or, what's the other guy's name?
I only played old.
Hajime. Havoc. That's his name.
Ultra Despair Girl.
Yeah, one of those two guys could do it. Yeah, because the thing about Survivor is it's not just about surviving. It's also about forging alliances and being friends with people. And it turns out that the protagonist turned out to be relatively good at forging alliances within Danganronpa. And so nobody decided to kill them. Well, not exactly, but I don't want to spoil the games.
There was a Saw video game. There were multiple Saw video games, so probably one of the characters from that.
Yeah, that could work. Who else would be good at Survivor? I mean, we could also think about survival video games. Like,
that's true, yeah.
People who are actually good at surviving.
Like you could do the guy from Don't Starve. Does he have a name?
I guess, yeah, but does he actually...
Assumed it was
he would be good at the social interaction part, though, right?
Yeah. Okay, this is...
I was going to suggest maybe the Badgers from Shelter, but I don't think Badger Mom... I don't think you have to ever take care of kids on Survivor, so maybe not.
What about... You know, because we're talking about a person who has to simultaneously both make alliances and be able to break alliances. Like, someone who you can trust, but who's also, like, kind of a dirtbag. And I'm going to say the narrator from the Stanley Parable.
Okay, yeah, that would work. He's got that friendly, soothing voice, but he's also kind of a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that working out pretty well. Huh. Yeah, you think he'd be more of a, like a, Richard Hatch type, or...
Huh. I'm not familiar with Survivor. I'm just going on reality TV cliches.
Okay. Richard Hatch was the person who won the first season of Survivor, and he was famous for making and breaking alliances, and that's sort of what started the trend of Survivor kind of being about that.
Yeah.
Although the second season was everybody loves each other, and it was kind of a love fest, and everybody said it was boring.
Yeah, I watched the first season, and then I got partway through the second one, and I couldn't do it because it was just like, where's the drama? Where's the intensity? And yeah.
Yeah, basically, it ended with the two people made to the end essentially were like best friends. And it was like, there was like no drama whatsoever. And it was hilarious. And they were like super happy for each other when the other one won. That's Survivor for you. Yeah, so I can see that working out for Survivor. You want somebody who can also like kind of backstab people a little bit.
Has there ever been a John Constantine video game?
Maybe. Possibly.
Oh, yeah.
Must have appeared in a video game at some point.
A Constantine video game.
Okay, then in that case, I vote him.
He can magic his way out of anything. I was going to suggest, in terms of sort of forging alliances and being able to spy on people and also being able to survive and being well-trained, I was going to suggest Iron Bull from Dragon Age. Dragon Age Inquisition. I think he'd be a good Survivor contestant. Because he's got the friendly personality, but he's also a spy, and he's also capable of backstabbing without spoiling anything too much. So yeah, I think he'd be able to survive pretty well on Survivor.
Nice.
Yep.
All right. Any other thoughts before we call this podcast to a close?
I think that we're going to need to see some exploration of this idea in the future.
Yeah, definitely. We're also going to need to watch some Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
Actually, nobody needs to watch Donkey Kong.
I don't think I'm going
to
do that.
We can just watch The Littlest Hobo. It has the best intro of all time.
We'll add it to the link dump. All right. So just before we end this, if you'd like to keep up to date with the podcast, please follow us on our website, avocadogamescast.wordpress.com. We post each episode. We also post a link dump. We talked about the show notes. That's what we're talking about. We're going to add all our blathering to that, and then you can laugh at our weird show notes. You can also subscribe to us. We're on iTunes. We're on Google Play Music. Also, make sure you check out The Avocado at the-avocado.org. Please don't type out the word hyphen. That would be a mistake. Just type a hyphen. All right. This was fun, guys. This game actually turned out significantly better than I thought it would. So thank you for making it interesting for both me and our listeners.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having
Very
me.
Very happy. Yeah, thank you right. For indulging me. And
this podcast is all about indulgence. And with that, we call us to a close. Have a great day, listeners, and thank you for listening.
Cool.
Bye.
Have a good day.